I'm Stephanie Overbuck.
I'm Mel Wymore.
And this is Pot of Gold.
Industrial agriculture has led to deforestation, land degradation, and biodiversity loss around the world. As we consider how we'll restore and repair the massive damage we humans have done to our planet, reimagining our food systems should be at the top of our list.
In this episode, we are speaking with Festus Kiplagat, an expert in agroforestry and founder of Green Planet Initiative's 2050 in Kenya. We ask him about his work to reinstitute indigenous farming practices that restore the earth rather than damage it, and to share his vision of a greener future for all people.
Take a listen.
Yeah, so my full name's Festus Kiplagat Chirchir. I come from the western side of Kenya. This is the beautiful side of Africa where we produce the elite athletes. And I happen to come from that community that always wins the races, so running the marathon under 2 hours. For me, I didn't build my career around athletics, but I'm running a different race against climate change and bringing a difference for communities. So I have a background of forestry and agroforestry. So I'm an agroforestry and a forestry expert by training. But I always like being called a tree grower because being a tree grower, you grow with the trees. Seeing a tree growing and increasing every day, like seeing the beauty of nature from a seed germinating to be a seedling, and then it gets at that sapling stage into the juvenile, what we call the juvenile period, before it transitions to be a mature tree. I mean, it is amazing. And I grow trees. I have a farm in my village because I was born and brought up in the village. So I am a blessed one because I have a blend of traditional indigenous knowledge and also conventional knowledge. My story is a long one, but I'll try to make it short. So I was born in a place where we had a woodland forest neighboring our home. And those years, it's not like these years. I think the human species, really, to be sincere, to be honest, has destroyed nature. What nature endured and gave us, we have really destroyed. Because those years, I could take care of my father's sheep in the forest. And that is where I could connect with nature. Looking at the butterflies, there are a lot of variety of butterflies buzzing around, flying around, the bees, the birds. And in the forest is where we could enjoy a lot of diversity, kind of all types of fruits. So we could not even go back for lunch because we're always full, you know, enjoying fruits. So when I grew up, transitioned from primary school to high school, I developed a passion to study nature because it was already infused in me. And, you know, I switched on the passion that I had. Oh, studying trees. Now it is now science is about knowledge around trees, unraveling the things that I knew, but now in a conventional way, in a scientific way, to study what the richness that nature has offered that I used to enjoy. So it was a very enjoyable journey.
It is indeed. You speak so deliciously about your youth. Could you tell us what climate change looks like for you in Kenya and over those years, how have things changed?
Climate change is a really broad term. But the what I call the compounded effect of climate change, because climate change, we like Africa is facing climate change challenges, impacts of climate change we are facing those impacts more than any other country, because now we are now receiving erratic rainfall. We have prolonged droughts. The rivers are not dry because of deforestation as such, as they say, but the rivers are dry because now the underground recharge, the usual rain that we used to usually get, is minimized. So the underground recharge is low. So in other words, the water aquifer has gone down. So they are now, if the effects of climate change has led to prolonged drought, so the prolonged drought has accelerated land degradation. Tell you what, beside climate change, the greatest challenge that we have in Africa is land degradation. Land degradation is huge, is a huge thing that is, in fact, it is accelerating. I mean, it's accelerating climate change, to say the least. Because now the soils are eroded, we lose soil fertility. The usual farm produce that we used to get, it's now dying away, you know. Total crop failure. There's total crop failure in most areas in Africa. And if you compound that with now the locusts, are coming in because of the shift in the wind patterns. Climate change has caused the shift in wind patterns. So it's blowing into land. So it's bringing locusts into areas that we've never had issues of locusts. And the impacts of climate change is more harsh on children and women. Where we are talking of food insecurity. We are talking of even insecurity now, because climate change has brought conflicts over resources. So it is predisposing this category of gender to these higher risks.
Yeah, it's enormous problems you're listing, actually. I mean, it's a huge list, which lists like a whole rat tail of things, you know, which come with land degradation. And losing this fertile land is devastation for communities and for, you know, for humans. And I know that in Europe, we actually have the same problem, yet nobody talks about it, because I think let's say the chemical industry, which is still quite huge. But I know that we do actually lose a lot of fertile land per year. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of consciousness about it, you know, because I think it's in the media, it's suppressed. There is not much talk. I think farmers are starting to realize that permaculture is maybe an alternative, but really these are really baby shoes. So what about in Kenya? Is there some more consciousness about this when you say, you know, there's movement already in your communities? What do you think?
Yes, so the solution to this, there are a lot of nature-based solutions that are being promoted to sort out, to address, to provide an adaptive mechanisms and to cushion communities from further exposure to the risks. Our communities are agro-pastoralist by nature. So the focus should be more on mindset change. And that is what is happening now in Africa. When you talk of Ethiopia, Kenya here, Uganda, Tanzania, there's a lot of push to change, to transform the mindset of communities, to utilize or to unlock what nature has to provide the needs that is required. So in other words, returning back to conservation agriculture, to begin to restore back the landscapes, the agricultural landscapes.
So that issue of mindsets is very interesting to me. Like, how do you go about changing the mindset of an entire community to shift practices as well?
Yeah, I would want to say, if we focus on landscape change, we lose it. But if we focus on mindset change, we win. So the methodology that we're using, like for my case, is creating, stimulating a process of peer-to-peer learning amongst the farmers themselves. And these are smallholder farmers and pastoralists. So training farmers to train others, creating a ripple effect. So what we do, identify farmers who have the passion to do restoration of landscapes, train them on best practices. We're talking of regenerative agriculture. We're talking of those traditional practices of organic farming, kitchen gardening. So transitioning them back to what they had before they, you know, before the land degradation, you know, affected them. So training a farmer to train others. So like in the village, you identify farmers who act as the extension agent, the change agents. And one farmer, you connect it with 10 other neighbors. So you're stimulating that movement and encourage exchange visits amongst themselves. So have farmer models within the community level. And it spreads very fast because as they see the land being restored to productivity, where you have sufficiency at household level. So others will learn and it will be replicated. And that is what that is working for Kenya. And communities are brilliant. Communities are very, when we go there and explain to them, they get it more than even the trainer himself, because they have the traditional backup.
Do you have like a practical example, Festus? So maybe an example where you were even surprised, you know, of maybe the transformation and the shift of mind. And
yes, there's one of our farmers. We taught her on the best practices on a simple model we call farmer-managed natural regeneration. Farmer-managed natural regeneration is a farmer-driven technique where you restore the landscape without tree planting. Yes, allow nature to fix it. So regeneration. So we train that farmer on to regenerate her landscape. So when she regenerated, then her farm, you know, every grass, we're talking of undergrowth sprout, began to sprout. Trees, all manner of species were sprouting. And then she moved there to manage. After some time, 2 years, she moved in to manage the trees, then the density of those trees, and integrated with crops. She created a movement in the village. All women, more than 60 women, she influenced more than 60 women in her village. They came to her farm to learn, because now her farm, she had enough firewood. Her children could not go far looking for firewood. She had sufficient pasture for the animals. She had even integrated some high-value trees, like she began growing mangoes and avocado trees within the same farm unit, integrating with the indigenous varieties that had regenerated. And she created a movement in the village. We're talking of 60 captured on record, 50. And we went there. We thought there was a huge function, a political function in our home, because the 60 farmers brought up their friends. So we had a gathering of more than almost 200 people in our home. Mindset and the way they were unpackaging, you know, the way they were unpacking the model amongst themselves. This is how I went about it.
Do you think this comes so naturally because of the indigenous history of farming in the area? I mean, is that something innate that's coming out? And could you speak a little bit about the loss of the indigenous traditions and how it's coming back, how it relates to this issue of farming?
Yeah, I think when conventional agriculture was promoted, conventional knowledge around agriculture eroded. It taught communities to, you know, you leave out what you used to know and then begin implementing this new way. And, you know, conventional method of agriculture is context specific. It doesn't work everywhere. It doesn't work everywhere. So that's when communities began to transition into the conventional way of farming, they lost the traditional practice, maize cobs, and we could hang them next to the fireplace. And that could be a seed bank. So we could plant those seeds in the farm, and they could do well. But conventional, they taught us to buy quality seeds, which has a lot of it's treated, it has a lot of chemicals. When we touch them, it is exposing us to chemicals. So there is need to return back communities to the best, those best practices which are traditionally sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Do you have pushback from industry, or is the industry getting involved, or lobbyists getting involved in this to counteract this movement? Or how is it working with these producers of the manufactured seeds, the industrial seeds, versus the local seed?
Yeah, they are trying to create that balance. But again, this is Africa. It is, most of the things are driven by greed and selfishness, because there have been even incidences where some unscrupulous traders, they just buy ordinary maize, mix them with some coloring, and then sell it to the community. And that is, so they have destroyed the quality of seeds. You know, there's not been those kind of controls. But communities have learned in the hard way. Having experienced those kind of failures, they have their own backup mechanism. So they have their own seed banks that they have. So when they are not sure of the quality of the seed that they are buying, they're available in the market, they go back to the seed bank that they have. So there's a lot of lack of a good policy framework that controls also distribution of quality seed. And again, the pricing is high. It may not be affordable to most of us, most smallholder farmers.
So Festus, like you said, there's a lack of policy. Is there a movement to actually shift that policy? And is there a vision for what that whole system would look like if you had it your way?
Now we have a new system of government. We have a devolved system of government. Devolution has really sorted out some of these many challenges, because we are now having services have been decentralized and they are closer. We have county governments. Those are like small states, I think, in your context. So they have decentralized, devolved functions closer to the villages. And in the villages where a lot of extension work is happening. So training, capacity building, strengthening those community structures to enhance, you know, their knowledge around agriculture and food production. So there's a lot of a good force that is happening. And also, like for some of our initiatives, we are complementing what government is doing to train and to empower, especially women, because women are the drivers of many development agendas in Africa.
Why is that?
Traditionally, women have a lot of roles in Africa, and women are the ones who are doing more of the farming than the men. Men do the role of the man is to provide for the family, so they are always out there to look for income for the family. But the woman in the village has a lot of time working in the farm with her children. And that is why we say in Africa, when you empower a woman, you're empowering not even the home, you're empowering an entire society. When you empower a woman, that means the children will get better access to good health, education, food. And there's a lot of joy at the household when a woman is empowered.
It's wonderful.
So good to hear. It really is. You know, I mean, I really also hear a positive story in India, you know, how women do empower not just themselves and their families, but the village, and how important that is for the community, and then the way farming is taking place. And then it basically has an impact on the region, and it has an impact in the end on the country and the end of the world. So it's really, really fantastic to hear. Is there anything, Festus, we haven't asked you, what you would really, really like to bring out to our listeners and to the world?
Yeah, what I want to bring out to the world is that the world is facing a lot of challenges. We cannot blame this on COVID alone. I think COVID has come to compound what we have been experiencing. And when we talk about climate change, and that is the greatest animal in the room. And we are getting into a level where we are calling it now the climate crisis. This is the time when the human species, you know, race, respective of race, color, you know, religious background, anything, the human species needs to get together and to create a movement, a global movement, to reverse what we're experiencing now. Climate change is a problem that is being felt across. The impacts are being felt across. And countries, nations have different way of cushioning themselves. But Africa is more predisposed to those impacts because some of this, you know, our facilities are still needs. The facilities in Africa are not like the facilities in the West, the health facilities. The agriculture, you know, the structures, we still have weak structures. So the world needs to stand together to fight climate change and to support each other. Look at Africa. We are talking of more than 1 billion people facing, exposed to hunger. So we need to focus a good force to fix the problems that Africa has. And that is why myself, I want to make a difference. I created a platform. I call it Green Planet Initiative 2050. I want to make a difference. I have vast experience in climate change, environment knowledge. I am building a platform to create projects, programs, processes, and products, what I call 5 P's. To bring a difference to my communities, to support women in the villages, smallholder farmers, pastoralists, solve these small challenges that are being magnified in the village because there are no sustainable solutions. So I want to be part of those who provide sustainable solutions for communities in the grassroots. So I am more of an actionist, not an activist.
No doubt you're marking your place in changing the world's history, that's for sure.
2050, that's not, you know, that's pretty close. Yet, it's not a lot of time because we are ticking, you know, I think globally, there's a really, we're living on a credit card basically and really can't really pay back the debt. That's how I put climate change really. So I think we do race against sort of a ticking clock. So what is your, what's the vision for 2050? What until then do you think has shifted on with your platform?
Number one, I want to unpack my vision in three phases of 10 years. So my first phase, when the UN gave an ultimatum that we only have 10 years to reverse climate change. I am aligned to that 10-year window period for action. And that is why I was endorsed by the UN Decade. My initiative was endorsed by the UN Decade of Ecosystem Restoration. And that is the year, the period between 2021 to 2030, when we should strive, consolidate efforts to reverse climate change. And we are not talking about tree planting. Tree planting will not address climate change. It will not single-handedly fix climate change. And in fact, the question that I can give the world is that let us not get into a level of greenwashing where we are pushing for planting trees. Where are you going to plant these trees? What are the successes? Are you reporting the successes of these trees? What about restoring the oceans? We need to integrate restoration. We need to restore the ocean ecosystem, the mountain ecosystem, the dry land ecosystem, the deserts, the tropical forests. We need to restore our agricultural landscapes, forest landscapes, pastoral landscapes. It should be holistic. We need to address our food systems. We need to address livelihoods for communities, because it is the people who cause deforestation. But how can we deal with that challenge? By addressing agriculture. Let us have sufficient food so that people should not struggle for income. In my community, some of my communities, they participate in unsustainable practices because of the low income. So they get into things like charcoal burning, you know, slash and burn. But if we fix our agricultural systems, have resilient market systems, people will not destroy the forest. In fact, people will be connected. We need to connect the population, the populace with nature. So if we connect people with nature, connect our cities with nature, then we fix the challenge of climate change. And then the 10-year, 2031, 2040 should be building on the successes and looking at addressing the gaps. What are those gaps that we witnessed in this first 10-year window period? 2041, 2050 is where we get to the race to net zero, where we should be having now, the electric, transitioning even from the electric cars to maybe magnetic engines, zero, in terms of even our travel should be zero. So we get, by 2050, we are net zero. Restore the Amazon. I believe by 2050, we have a fully restored Amazon. Our rivers should be flowing, you know, and that kind of thing. Enough food for communities. We should not be talking about people dying of hunger, because we have statistics show that 15,000 children, people, die of hunger every day. So 15,000, that is how many thousand, that's multiply that by 30 globally. I mean, we are losing quite a number of people out of hunger, which we can fix.
You make it sound so so possible, right? So possible to get to zero in 2050. And it's like, I wonder how you feel about all these distractions, you know, social warfare, race warfare going on all over the world that kind of distract us from the climate crisis and actually prohibit the kind of organization and unification that you're talking about around the human race. Do you have any strategies for how to stay focused on climate and bring unity to these different conversations?
I think we need to restore our social fabric. Even if we are promoting, like I was talking here in Kenya, we are promoting gender, you know, we're promoting gender balance, gender parity, so just equal, you know, we're creating equity. We should not disrupt the social fabric. I mean, what makes me a man? What makes me man? You know, we should reset our thinking and know that we are human. You know, color, race, religion should not create a division around us. We need to get back to humanity, where I am beginning to care for my brother more. You know, as much as I care about myself, I care about my neighbor, I care about my brother. You know, we create that strong ties. And as I said, that can happen if we begin also connecting people to appreciate nature. When we begin to appreciate nature, we'll begin to appreciate each other. Because a tree is a living being. A tree interacts with other living organisms around to make it survive. And even as our bodies are full of germs, we interact with germs for living. So if germs make us alive, I mean, why don't we associate with others? Because, you know, we reason, we think like they think. So we need to get back to our foundation.
What a great message, Festus. Thank you so much.
So I normally wouldn't recommend connecting on LinkedIn, because, you know, LinkedIn is whatever it is. But Festus is a fantastic poster, and he has the most inspiring posts on LinkedIn and actually all, you know, Twitter and his other social media. So it's really great. Like how to build, like let a tree grow from a banana, peel, and other really funny, great posts. I love it, Festus. Well done. Good job inspiring people. And I think you dive a lot deeper than just doing social media posts in your homeland in Africa. And that's inspiring even more. So
yeah, I mean, I think Festus has the kind of deep connection to nature, and actually the joyous connection to nature that maybe we should all aspire to, you know, because I think that is what's going to cause us to change our practices, whether we're a farmer or a consumer or, you know, a gas guzzler. We need some real motivation, I think, to change our mindset and change the way we live.
Mm.
And people like Festus are inspiring, yes. But more than that, it's actually the joy, that connection, to share that with all of us and have us actually partake as well. That's the key, I think.
Yeah, and he stays very locally based, you know, it's very clear he tries to create the local impact within Africa, within the societies he knows, it's just really good to know someone like Festus, and I hope we find more people who are getting inspired by his work and doing this kind of work in Africa and somewhere else.
Yeah, me too. You know, it makes me think, you know, living in the middle of a Manhattan apartment and think, how could I connect to nature? And, you know, part of it is really being curious about going into those daily activities that we do, like making a cup of coffee or, you know, putting ice in our drink. And how do we look analytically at those different activities from a perspective of how does it impact the earth?
And can we have problem starting a compost now.
Yeah, and I think that's the key. We really got to look deep and feel that connection.
We are an independent, listener-supported podcast.
For the price of one latte per month, you can help fuel our work and keep our content untainted by commercial interests.
For more exclusive content, join us on patreon.com or click donate on potofgold.world.
Thanks to our producer, Riley Paul. I'm Mel Wymore.
And I'm Stephanie Overbeck.
Thanks for listening.